Les Norman, host of Breaking the Norm, and also he former Royals player, and he is a motivational speaker. He was in Beloit not too long ago to talk to kids in our schools and in our area. And Les is a great guy. We've had him on the show before, and we're glad to have him back again. Les, how you doing, man?
I'm doing good, Wade. Thanks for having me, man. You doing good down there, or should I say up there or over there?
Well, it felt like we were near the Rocky Mountains after we had a little bit of snow here in October. That felt a little bit weird, but after that, things have warmed up, and I think we're back to normal. How about you? Everything been good for you and your and all your friends and family here the last few months since we talked to you?
Yeah, things are good. You know, we had our first hard frost the other day, and people were complaining that they had to get up and scratch a little bit of ice off their windshield. And so then, you know, with my family, I showed them the radar and said, you are 3 hours away from what would be the start of the winter season. So let's be happy with what we have. So yeah, everybody's healthy. Everybody's good watching the playoffs, and you know, kids are still in fall ball finishing up.
Excellent. Well, let's start with the playoffs. And I want to talk about the Royals and their upcoming off season and what they accomplished this past year. Man, I don't know which series is more fascinating to you. Is it the ALCS or the NLCS?
I'm going to say the answer to that question is yes. because both series, you know, there's a back-and-forth swing. You count the Dodgers out, and then all of a sudden, Rich Hill throws a gem last night, and the bullpen, we keep talking about Milwaukee's bullpen, which was still good, but the Dodgers' bullpen was great. You know, you talk about Alex Bregman is the big talk, and the huge lineup with Houston, and then the conversation switches to the wire-to-wire accomplishments of the Boston Red Sox and what they're accomplishing. And then you start thinking about, well, if this team wins one on the road, then it goes back, and you can't beat them twice there. You can't beat, you know, it's crazy because the dialogue and the storyline, as soon as it goes to one team in either division, it goes right back to then the other team and the reason why they could win. And so when the Dodgers are playing as they should play and meeting expectations, because they've been below expectations for so long, and then the Brewers are, you know, it's 2-2, and the Brewers are just as much of a legitimate shot as the Dodgers are, and then you've got the two powerhouses on the AL side in Houston and Boston. This makes up for a pretty incredible postseason.
Well, let's start with the NLCS. I find that one a little bit more fascinating, and the reason why is just the difference in philosophies. You have the Dodgers that have probably the better starting pitching, or at least starting pitching we know of, and Kershaw's on the hill today. The rookie Buehler is very good, and Rio, and of course they got a good start out of Hill, as you mentioned. Whereas the Brewers have got a whole bunch of cast-offs and journeymen that are starting pitchers who have done a nice job in this series. But the Brewers want to get it to one guy in particular, Josh Hader, who reminds me a lot of Andrew Miller a couple years ago, where you almost feel like he's a robot. He's unhittable. He's automatic when he comes in. And if you can just somehow ride it out and get through the time that Hader is on the hill, just like it happened last night, the Dodgers have a chance to win, and they did in 13 innings. It's just really interesting because we've seen the concept of the opener, and we've seen the quick hook in the playoffs, and we've seen that for a while now. But the Brewers kind of taken it to a little bit of a different level.
They are. It's unseen. I think it's this new generation of manager, because we've seen a little bit of Alex Cora doing it as well with Boston. It's these younger managers that are kind of changing things up a little bit. It's the win now mentality, and I guess when you're in the playoffs, every run, every inning, every game counts, because you can't, you know, you're not seeing this with Council or Cora in game 30, in game 70, in game 100 of the regular season. But now, when it really, really matters, now that you're in the playoffs and it's, you know, you have to stay alive, you're seeing this new switch. It's this new generation of managers. So it's working a little bit. I've been asked the question a lot, are we going to see this kind of change? People ask Ned Yost in Kansas City, are you going to start doing this? And he showed that he was interested in pursuing at least the nerdery, I call it, the statisticians that figure out all these averages and what works and what doesn't. I don't think it's going to be some major thing that sticks, but in elimination games or in series where you're trying to get to the end, I think it's something that, you know, it's something that works. I think the one risk you have there is that it, even though it hasn't really backfired yet, if it does backfire, huge backlash, and has an opportunity to put you in a pitching hole if you lose a game, and then you've used all these guys, it could put you in a hole for that game and the next game. That just hasn't come to bite these guys yet.
this might be a weird question, but does that take the fun out of the game? I mean, I love the gut feeling. Like, so many times we get caught up in lefty versus lefty, righty versus righty, and the guy comes in, he blows the guy away, three pitches, and then, boop, quick hook, we make another pitching change. And sometimes, and I know they go by the analytics, or as you said, the nerdery of it all with the numbers, but does that take some of the fun out of it?
You know, that is a great question that isn't asked enough, and Major League Baseball always says the game's about the fan. And in the money sense, yeah, well, that's paying salaries and people coming and buying the jerseys and all those things. But I think you're absolutely right in the sense of even asking the question. And I think it does a little bit because you start to expect, okay, well, here's another pitching change. I mean, the game's going to be 4 and 5 hours if this kind of thing happens because there's pitching change after pitching change after pitching change. You know, it's good that they put the mound visits out there, but, you know, there's ways around everything. When you're changing pitchers, you can be exact in the science of when you're going to do it. So, yeah, I think it does a little bit. I mean, in the end, you forget about it if there's a win or a loss there.
Right.
But still, over time, I think the fans are going to get tired of seeing it. Not that that'll change it or anything. But, we'll think about it in your sense. I think about it as a former player and still a fan and now a guy that analyzes it both on radio and TV. In all three senses, it takes the fun out of a little bit for me. What do you think?
Yes, it does take some of the fun out for me because I'm watching Chacin the other night for the Brewers, and he's cruising along, pitching great. It's a one-run game. He's in the sixth, and Moustakas, former Royal, makes an error, and he's gone. And I was like, he pitched fine. He got a ground ball to third, and all of a sudden, I don't know if it's a panic move, but immediately, like, okay, I got to get the lead runs coming to the plate. I got to change pitchers. And I'm like, why? It's not like that ball was even hit. I mean, it was hit pretty hard. Moose would tell you he should have made the play, but it wasn't the pitcher's fault. He didn't make the play. It wasn't a ball that was hit with authority, you know, near the warning track or anything like that. And I'm like, wow, what a quick hook.
Yeah, what you're saying there is that, well, you just got a ground ball, but because now a guy's on and your pitch count may be getting up a little bit and it's late and we've got this great bullpen, we're going to trust more of our bullpen than for you and the next guy to get another ground ball to now get a double play or something along those lines. So you've trusted them for six against one of the most high-powered offenses in all of baseball, but one guy gets on and now you don't trust him anymore.
Exactly.
So, yeah, it does. It takes the fun out just a little bit. And I'm sure there are some starters that will say, you know what, it's fine. We just want to win. But in the back of their mind, you know, they're going home thinking, you know, you trust me, and all of a sudden you get a little clenchy in the cheeks, and you know you feel like, well, we can't trust this anymore. So you're going to overuse your bullpen over time, and you're going to start to have an air of distrust in your starters.
Les Norman, host of Breaking the Norm, a former Royal, is with us today on the Sports Ticket. One more thing about the playoffs. Let's go to the ALCS. You got the Red Sox up two games to one versus the Astros. And here's an example of what we're talking about. David Price, who we know has had a rough playoff career, especially as a starting pitcher. The other night, he wasn't super effective, but he goes 4 2/3. And then they pull him out of the game, and they had the lead. And then he doesn't get the win, but the Red Sox won. Now, David Price will tell you it's no big deal if I got the win or not, although with all the criticism he gets, it might have been a big deal. And that's, managers aren't worried about those individual accolades during the postseason, but yet during the regular season, more than likely Price would have been in so that he could get the win. How do you think that affects big leaguers who, a lot of them do have egos and are worried about the numbers? They might not say that publicly, but when the playoffs come and you're out away from getting the official decision, how do you think that works for the players?
Well, I think in a situation with David Price, and I think we're seeing it with some starters, even Clayton Kershaw, their postseason track records are horrible.
Yeah.
I mean, as great as they are, they're making a ton of money, and at least in baseball terms, you know, we talk about earning a contract. I mean, how many homeless people do we have in the world, or how many people that have needs in the world that would take $100, let alone $100 million? So
yeah.
I don't have a lot of sympathy for these guys. But in the baseball world only, you know, these guys' track record in the postseason is miserable. So I'm thinking, at least for guys like David Price or Clayton Kershaw, yeah, you're a competitor, you're a professional athlete, you want to be able to do it, but knowing if you leave with a lead, at least that'll maybe kind of reverse a little bit of the track record. It probably, for them, they'll show that, oh man, I wish I could stay in there, but yeah, they're happy that they got out of it. Now, that might be a different story if the manager takes them out, brings in this supposedly locked down guy, then they give it up, and then they spit the win. Hindsight's always 20/20, whether it's good or bad. Always 20/20. So I think guys like that are probably a little, they're fine with it postseason, but you do have those competitive guys that have had a pretty good, at least a decent or better record in the postseason, or maybe they haven't had enough postseason experience to think, you know what, I want to cement myself, I want to get this. It's a matter of the personality and the pride of that particular pitcher, and it depends on their postseason record.
Okay, so I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you like right now? The Red Sox and the Astros. Red Sox up 2-1. Who do you like winning out of the AL?
Well, I think the World Series, I think the American League is going to win the World Series. I just think that either Houston or Boston are better than both Milwaukee or L.A. I would like to see Milwaukee because I'm an underdog guy. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers have had more than ample opportunity to win it. I'd probably cheer more for L.A. or at least be happy with him if Puig was out of the lineup. I'm not a big fan of how he plays the game, and I'm tired of watching him lick his bat. Disgusting. But, yeah, I would take Milwaukee in that side. Houston can surprise you. I will go with my pick so I don't back off and say Boston in the AL and then Boston winning the World Series. Either way, in the AL, I'd be happy because I think they're both great teams. And I don't think the National League, either team, has enough power to get them. So I think the American League's going to win, and I'll say Boston barely edging over Houston.
All right. Former Royals, this has been fun. I probably wouldn't be as engrossed in the playoffs if there weren't the connections between past Royals. And it's amazing that I'm watching these series. Well, first of all, it started with the Cubs versus the Brewers, who had an extra game to decide who was division champion. And I see Zobrist against Kane and Moustakas, even Eric Kratz, who was on the team in 14. And then you got Wade Davis and Drew Butera and the Rockies playing the Cubs, and they knock out Zobrist and the Cubs. And then I'm watching the Brewers, and I go, oh, God, I forgot about Soria, who, by the way, everybody wanted to run him out of town, and he's kind of resurrected his career and pitched very well for the Brewers this year. That was a good trade by Milwaukee midseason. Uh-huh. And then I'm cheering for the Brewers, not because I'm a Brewers fan, but because, one, I agree with you. The Dodgers been there, done that. I like to see somebody else win it. But also because Lorenzo Cain, Mike Moustakas, I'm really cheering for them. And somebody asked me the other day, and I'll ask you the same question. Would we be caring as much about the playoffs as Royals fans? Would we be cheering as much or pulling for former Royals in any of these situations had the Royals lost the 2015 World Series?
That is actually a great question. I think your diehard fans are going to see it. I mean, you know, in Kansas City and in every city, you're always going to have your blue bloods. Your guys, they're just so loyal. They're going to cheer for your team no matter what. Then there's the bitter diehards that if you're not wearing your uniform, even if you used to play, then I'm just not going to cheer for you. I think, again, it's a new generation of fan that's out there. It's this younger generation. The game's changing a little bit. And I feel like, you know, it's a Yankee fan's always going to be a Yankee fan. I mean, we know that. They're going to, if you bring an opposing team's jersey into your stadium, they're not just going to run you out of their section. They're going to make you get an Uber out of town. But the bottom line is that I think with this generation, people are going to cheer because it's a lot more, GMs are getting clubhouses more about being comfortable. They're signing guys that are great players, but also leaders that aren't disrupting a clubhouse, that it's a character base, especially in Kansas City with Dayton Moore. And so you had guys like Lorenzo Cain. I mean, think about in the last 10 to 15, maybe 20 years, how many guys in a Royals uniform have ever gotten trouble in the public eye? Not many, if at all. Yeah. And so it's easy to cheer for Lorenzo Cain. It's easy to cheer for Mike Moustakas. It's easy to cheer for Joaquin Soria because they're good guys. They're men of character. They're talented. And we want, as human beings, to root for good guys that don't get into trouble, that make us happy, that give us hope, that give us, hey, if you want to be a big leaguer, that's great, to our kids, but this is the guy you should model, Lorenzo Cain, who didn't pick up a baseball glove until he was 15 and he wore it on the wrong hand, and look at him now. So, I think that it's the generation that is going to cheer. I think they care more, even if they didn't win the World Series in 15, I think they care more because it's about the character of the player, and when that player is successful, joyful, and lives that model, it's easy to root for him.
Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. So let's talk about the current Royals. Ned Yost is going to be back. It's kind of funny because middle of the year we were talking and we didn't think Ned would be back on our show. We were talking about it. But then once...
Me neither.
Yeah, and then once they went all youth for the most part and they traded some of the veterans and then they started playing some good ball and you saw O'Hearn and Dozier starting to click a little bit and, of course, what Mondesi did and then the starting pitching, you started to wonder, well... You know, it makes it a little bit harder to walk away when you start to see this talent coming up together again, and everybody wants to make comparisons to history. Well, this is like the 14-15 Royals. No, they're a completely different group, and they'll do their own thing. But Ned is coming back. Do you think that he changed his mind during the season, that he wasn't going to be back, and now he is? Or do you think all along the plan was Ned figured, I'll stick it out for another year or two?
I think it's the first one. I think that he was in line. He's done plenty. He's going to, Royals Hall of Fame coach who brought the World Series back after a 30-year drought that made us all bang our heads against the wall. Mm-hmm. He was the manager in place. Now, there were some times where, back when they fired Kevin Seitzer, I was not a Ned Yost fan, and I even publicly said, hey, I think they fired the wrong guy. Now, I'm glad I was wrong in the sense of, I'm glad they didn't fire Ned Yost because he was the guy. I still think they shouldn't have let Seitzer go, but, that's a whole other story. But I think that once the veterans left and the trades came and the signings came and you got guys in, the young guys started to be able to play on their own and Mondesi started to figure it out. And again, these young guys brought unity in a clubhouse. It was a brotherhood. It was a family. There weren't any cliques. It was sacrificing for the other guy. It wasn't the cliche of, hey, I play for the name on the front of the jersey, not the back of the jersey. You can say that, but when you live that, and it's that complete kind of whole thing of character in the clubhouse and it shows in the field, then they start playing together, then this talent starts coming out, and it's like, you know what? I think I can hang on for one more year. Now, let's also understand, when you're making millions of dollars as a manager, it's kind of hard to turn that down for sure, too. But I think he changed his mind. I think we were all, for those of us that were thinking he was probably done, I believe that he was. He hasn't told me that specifically, but I just kind of got that feeling. But then when you saw this team winning that wasn't supposed to win, guys that hardly had any big league time at all, I mean, in major league terms, they still had the binky in their mouth, and they were winning. And they came up here not realizing that they weren't supposed to win. That brought new excitement to Kansas City. That brought new excitement to Ned Yost, and so I think that's why he stayed.
There's so many things that I'll say this. Before the year began, I wasn't very optimistic about the team, and even when they signed the veterans and they got Moustakas back, I thought this team was going to lose 90 to 95 games, and then it got so bad there for a while, you're like, man, they're going to blow away the franchise record for losses, and they actually ended up avoiding that with their strong finish. And you do kind of wonder as a fan, well, what if the Royals would have gone younger and used those guys a little sooner? But you could also counter with that and say, well, they might not have been quite ready, needed a few months in the minors, and then come up. And you got to trust Dayton Moore because he's done it before with young guys, and you trust him to do it with this group as well.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of what you said there, also with the a lot of the other teams like Milwaukee, that they needed to spend time to figure out money and to figure out how they were going to best use a guy like Moustakas and Kane. And, early in the season, maybe one or both weren't in their mindset. So a lot of things have to develop and play out through the season, especially some of those minor league guys. I mean, Hunter Dozier's been here enough, and they were going to use him no matter what. But Mondesi needed to – I mean, we remember when they brought Mondesi up when he was a teenager, and he wasn't ready. No. I mean, he was not even close to being ready. He needed another season in the minor leagues and a little bit of time in the minor leagues at the beginning of this season. So there are guys that it's amazing there are scouts out there that almost know exactly when, okay, now he's ready. He needs about another 100 at-bats, and now he's ready. And sure enough, they'll get their minor league 100 at-bats where they're not thinking, they're not worried. The amazing thing is in AAA, they still use a baseball with the same specs. They still pitch from 60 feet, 6 1/4 inches. And, sometimes it's the surreal. They have to mentally prepare themselves so when they come to the big leagues, it's not surreal. They feel like they belong there and they're not looking over their shoulders. They're just playing. That's when the real athlete comes out. And sometimes guys need a little more seasoning. And most people think, oh, well, they just need more bats. Sometimes that isn't the case. Sometimes they need to grow up and mature a little bit They need to gain confidence a little bit. They need to get the surreal out of their head a little bit. And I think that the Royals, with this young group near the second half of the season, they got together, their minds got together, and they put the right formula of when this guy and when this guy and when this guy needed to come up, and they all nailed it. They all got it right, and this is going to be a great team.
You know, I look at this team going next year because, you know, before the season, I didn't think they were going to be very good, and I didn't have a lot of optimism, and I was thinking, no, this team's 5, 6, 7 years away. And then the way the season ended and seeing what some of these guys did, I feel so much better about where this organization is headed, and I've kind of sped up that year for them to maybe be back in contention. Because, I mean, if you're around, you know, if you're 5 games over .500, you're going to be right there for the wild card come, say, August, and that means you're in it.
In this division.
Yeah, and the Indians are going to fall back, and the White Sox, the Twins regressed, and the they're changing managers, and the White Sox and Tigers are a mess right now. But when I look at this team, I look up the middle. Salvi at catcher, Witt at second, Mondesi at short, and then center field's a question, although Phillips, I love his defense. If you just get the bat going, I mean, there is reason to be optimistic at almost all of the positions, everyday positions for the Royals, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely right. And the thing with he was hurt a little bit, but a lot of times for projection offensively, I'll just watch a guy's mechanics and how he adjusts to what a pitcher does. And I'll even watch the way they walk up to a bats and the way they walk back to the dugout after a strikeout or anything like that, and just kind of watch the consistency there. I don't care about what the numbers say. My projection is based on how they carry themselves. And I think that Brett Phillips is a guy that is going to be good because when he came off of a long layoff, 10, 11 games, 40 to 50 at-bats he lost, and he comes in and, one of the first curveball he sees is a curveball that breaks about 3 feet and keeps his shoulder in and takes it right back up the box. And, you know, he's hustling. That's the kind of whole thing you're getting from this Royals team. So every position, the only one that really worried me a little bit was Bonifacio, because I think he got a little bit comfortable and then he got suspended. Mm-hmm. So I think he realizes he's not bulletproof, and maybe as much as we hate guys that cheat, or hate the fact that guys cheat, maybe for him that was the humility of getting caught that brought him back down to earth. And so he's no longer a question mark for me, and I agree with you. I think at every position, things are really looking up for the future.
Well, and you get a full year of Soler, who was having a pretty good year, but he seems to be jinxed with injuries. That would be a nice addition. Let's start about the pitching. We were talking about this the other day. You know, in the last couple of years, you go into spring training and you're like, oh, goodness gracious. I mean, who the heck's going to be the fourth or fifth starter? I mean, we got guys we never heard of joining the team. But Dayton, I mean, he did a tremendous job in the Rule 5 draft. And, of course, Keller had an outstanding rookie campaign. And then Phil Meyer looked really good. And to make a long story short, the Royals have, I think, 7, 8, maybe 9 candidates that could be in the rotation starting next year. Now, you figure probably the top four are pretty solid with Duffy and Keller and Junis and probably Kennedy in his final year of his contract. But you've got 4 or 5 guys that really have a legitimate chance of getting that fifth spot. And in the past, the Royals have been lucky to even fill it.
Right. And you know, people think, well, Kennedy has to pitch because he made all that money and he's in the final year of his contract. But look, it's not like he's in the second year of his contract where they're going to have to eat $60 million.
Yeah.
It's the last year of his contract. And although you never want to eat money and you don't want to waste money, I would rather have a guy, if Kennedy early in the season doesn't pitch like he's kind of in a decline.
Yes.
And of those 4 pitchers you mentioned, he's the one question mark for me. So if he doesn't start off decent, like you said, you know, there's 7 or 8 guys that can contend for one spot. I mean, Lopez came up and dealt. I mean, he was nasty. I mean, his stuff is electric, and it wasn't just a spot start here and there. It's like something clicked for him, and he got consistent. So I could see him even filling Kennedy, the fifth spot or Kennedy's spot if he doesn't work out. And now you've got 3, 4 guys that can fill in. So it looks really, really bright. I would really like to see Duffy. Duffy's still, he's a fog.
Yes.
He's behind, you know, you see Duffy, you see the greatness there, but there's still something there. There's a little fog of uncertainty with him. I would like to see him get his act together a little bit and pitch how we know he can pitch and be healthy. I'm sure we all want Kennedy to pitch, but he's not a big concern because we have options, and that's what they're young options, which is what the rotation has not had.
What's your biggest area of concern with this team next year? Would it be the bullpen?
Yes, absolutely. With a capital, with a capital YES exclamation point. Keller was a great situation where he was a great bullpen guy. You brought him in. I was skeptical, but he has done nothing but deal. People were worried about his size. The thing is, I've had a chance to do a couple out of the field appearances with him and go to a couple schools. He's a humble guy. He's a sponge. He's always asking questions. He's always learning. He's a bulldog. He doesn't give in. He's unflappable in situations where a couple guys get on base. And he's all of 23 years old. So he has the whole makeup, both brain and body and talent, to be able to get it done. So I'm not concerned about that. But filling, you don't want to take these guys that could start. And if they don't make the rotation, automatically throw them in the bullpen and think, well, they're going to be great starters. They're our answer. It doesn't always translate. It translated with Keller. It doesn't always translate. They tried this with Wade Davis, bullpen starter, and making him go back and forth. But once they finally settled in his strength, we know he's become one of the best relievers in all of baseball for a few years now. So, yeah, I think that that's their main part to address. And if they don't, we could be talking about a great team that just keeps losing leads.
Nate Karns, Ryan LaFever, we had him on early this past season, and there was hope they'd be in the rotation. And Ryan said, listen, if he isn't good enough to be in the rotation, he thought he'd be an excellent setup guy, a really good bullpen piece. And the guy just seems to be jinxed by injuries the last couple of years. I know you can't count on him to be healthy because he hasn't been. But if he were, wouldn't he be a perfect piece for that bullpen?
Well, I think he would. I think we've seen him struggle when he started and both when he's trying to battle injuries and still pitch through it. Nate Karns was over the middle of the plate a lot. And we've seen him with the ability to hit his corners. And he really does have good stuff. I mean, his off-speed's good. He's got a nice curveball. He obviously has pitched enough. He's got the brain for it. He understands it. I just think that when you keep battling injury and you keep finding the middle of the plate, when you know, I mean, it was kind of like Luke Hochaver. We know Luke Hochaver had great stuff. He threw hard. He understood the game. But he just battled different things here or there. And I know at one time Luke had a really high ERA, but we knew he was better than that. So I think maybe if you take him out of the rotation, say, okay, we're going to give you the mindset. We know you have great stuff. You're healthy now, if he is in fact healthy. So we are going to lock you in and have you be our setup guy. And of course, you're going to have guys in the wings and AAA or guys in the big leagues that can fill that role too. But if you're paying him the money and he has the stuff, let him get his mind set on one particular area of expertise so he doesn't have those monkeys on his back. And I really think he could excel in that.
Do you think Dayton will be very active in the offseason free agency-wise, or do you think he'll just be looking for a few pieces to supplement this young team?
Oh, man, that's a great question, Wade, because, you know, we've tried to say, you got to do something, and then he doesn't do anything. And then the skeptics out there say, you should have done something. And then look what he's put together, because we were talking about this team's not going to be good again until at least 2025.
Yeah.
Now they're probably going to be really good in 2021.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if they showed the second half of this season, even though they're young. So it's hard to say what Dayton Moore is going to do, but here's what I know. When I think he needs to do one thing, he does the other, and he's right. When I think he should do the other thing, he does the opposite of that, and he's right.
Yeah.
Dayton Moore, since day one, has earned my respect. He's earned my trust. Besides the fact that he's one of the most upstanding character-driven, leadership-driven men, and he lives it, that I've ever known, he just seems to understand the game more than we give him credit for. And so I'm to the point I won't second-guess that man. I'm going to trust whatever he does. He's not going to be perfect. Nobody's going to be perfect. But he knows the game. He always has a plan. He gets people to believe in the plan because people want to run through the brick wall for him. And more times than not, he's right. And he is one of the main reasons why winning championship baseball and a World Series trophy came back to the city.
Absolutely. Well said. All right, Tom, for off-the-wall question, Les Norman, our guest today on the Sports Ticket. He's famous because he's a former Royal. He's famous because he has his own sports talk show, Breaking the Norm. But Les is also famous because he was on Wheel of Fortune, which leads us to the off-the-wall question, which I've always wondered when I watch Wheel of Fortune, and that is, if the puzzle is completely blank, And let's say you automatically had the money to buy a vowel. What vowel do you go with every single time with a blank puzzle, Wheel of Fortune? A, E, I, O, or U?
I'm going with E.
E every time?
Yeah, I would go with E if it's always blank, because one of my strengths in both high school and college was spelling and literature. Mm-hmm. And I actually used to study, when I did crosswords, I would study word endings and middle of words to try to figure things out like that. And so for me particularly, it's not just a random, oh, I just like E. And I've actually done a little bit of background when I was in my early 20s on word endings and word structure. But it was for crossword puzzles, but, you know, hey, maybe it worked out a little bit. I just got back from Costa Rica a couple months ago from my trip that I won there, and it was amazing, and it was a trip of a lifetime. So, hey, I guess it helped me.
Well, I just want you to know that the baseball nerds, I had the numbers. That is the correct answer. By their numbers,
yay!
You have a 41% chance of getting a puzzle right when you go with E. 24%, I'm making this all up, but it sounds good. 41% E, 24% A, whatever the case may be. Tell everybody how they can listen to you and read more about you, Les.
Absolutely. The main thing is the website. It's just my name, lesnorman.com. It's one S. I know people think I'm less than Les, but it is only one Les. Or one S and less. So it's lesnorman.com. All the podcasts are up there. If people are in KC, they're driving through the show Breaking the Norm airs Tuesdays on 94.5 FM and then Saturday mornings at 7 on Sports Radio 810. But, you know, because there's people are all over the place and where you guys are at, you can't get it in most times unless you're driving that way. It's just lesnorman.com. Please don't do it while you're driving. Keep everybody safe. But, and then the radio page has all the podcasts up there. Hundreds of podcasts you can download or listen to and have some fun with it.
Les, we always appreciate the time. Enjoy having you on the show. Have a terrific baseball offseason. Enjoy the rest of the playoffs. And we'll talk to you again next season.
Absolutely. You too as well. Thanks for having me on.
Les Norman, our guest today on The Sports Ticket.